We now start the sixth parak of Maseches Shkalim, and the main point of the parak is going to be these 13 shofarot, chests in which they kept money for various purposes, and we'll describe what those purposes are. But here our first Mishnah, which will say there are 13 shofarot, we'll say there are 13 of two other things in the Beis HaMikdash, and then speaking of 13, not only do we list the three kinds of things of which there are 13 in the Beis HaMikdash, we will detail all 13 of each of those types. So here we go. The Mishnah says, Shlosha sar shofaros. There were 13 chests, storage chests for money. Again, they called shofarot because of the way they were shaped, wide at the bottom to hold lots of coins, but narrow on top so people couldn't stick their fingers in and steal. And maybe it's bent over as well. There were also shlosha sar shulchanos. There also were 13 tables, as we'll explain in the Perek Bez Hashem. And shlosha sre hishtachavayos. There were also 13 prostrations, Hayba Mikdash, in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, just so you should understand, Hishtachavayos, referring to prostrations, doesn't just mean bowing. To bow is what we bow from the hips, let's say, but the knees remain locked, so to speak. But a Hishtachavaya is actually when your knees are touching the ground, and your face is also touching the ground, and your hands are touching the ground. You're going all the way down. So, when a person would enter the Beis HaMikdash, he would do a circuit, and he would go counterclockwise around. More details, starting turning to the right initially, we'll see all those details shortly, Bez Hashem, but the point is, at 13 different stations, as he went around, he would bow down. Shel Beis Rabban Gamliel, v'shel Beis Rabbi Chananya Skana Kohanim, or maybe it's Rabbi Chanina Skana Kohanim, Hayo Mishtachavin Arba Esre. There was a tradition in the family of Rabban Gamliel's house, as well as that of Chananya or Chanina Skana Kohanim, that they would bow 14 times. Why? V'heichan Haisa Yisera, where was that extra prostration done? Keneged dir ha'etzim. That was opposite the lishkas ha'etzim, the chamber where they kept the wood. If you look in the Ezra's Nashim, there were those four chambers, and the northeast chamber, right as you come in there, is the lishka for the etzim, where the wood was kept, and where the kohanim, who were psulim, where they were couldn't do the main avoda because they had a mom, would check the wood for worms. And the wood was kept over there, and that was the wood that was used on the marachot, on the pyres, on the mizbeach. So, they had a tradition that over there, shekein mesoros beyadam avoseim shesham ha'aron nignaz, their tradition was that it was beneath the lishka se'etim, the chamber where that wood was, is where Yechoniah hid the aron, meaning the aron from the Kadosh Kedoshim, that held within the luchos, sabris, when the Navi warned him that the Babylonians would soon sack the temple, so he hid it there before Nebuchadnezzar came, so that would protect, that protected the Aron from being taken and was kept in a secret chamber. Others didn't have the tradition, others understood that he had taken it with him, or was taken by the Babylonians in the exile, or was hidden elsewhere. But that was their tradition, and therefore they bowed down at a 14th station in front of the Dira Eitzim, as the Mishnah calls it, meaning the Lishkas Eitzim. Shkalim, Perek Vav, Mishnah Beis, 6-2, and really a straight continuation of the previous Mishnah, in which we had said that there was a tradition that the Aron had been hidden beneath the Lishkas Ha'etzim, the wood chamber, in the Beis HaMikdash, and kept there for safekeeping. So the Mishnah here says, Ma'asa v'kohen echad. Once it happened, there was a certain Kohen, Shahaya Mis'asek. He was doing his job there, he was checking the wood for worms, v'ra haritzpa shehi mishuna mechaverta. He saw that one of the floor tiles was different in some way than other floor tiles, suggesting that this was the floor tile which had been removed, under which a tunnel had been dug, the Aron had been hidden, and then recovered up, and, you know, the floor wasn't exactly matching. Ba va'amar l'chavero, so he went to tell his friend, say, look, I found the missing floor tile. Lo hispik ligmor es hadavar, however, he didn't get a chance to finish what he set out to do, meaning to show his friend the funny tile and where the Aron must be hidden. Ad sheyatza nishmaso, until he dropped down dead, his soul left him, so that he couldn't reveal the secret. V'yadu b'yichur, and therefore they knew with certainty, shesham ha'aron nignas, and therefore they knew for sure that it was there under the lishkas ha'etzim where the Aron habris had been hidden. Shkalim, Perek Vav, Mishnah Gimel, 6-3. since the Perek wants to enumerate the 13 different shofaros, the chests that were set aside for different purposes in the Beis HaMikdash, we started out by listing two other 13s that appeared in the Beis HaMikdash, namely 13 prostrations, hishtachavayos, that occurred as one went around the Beis HaMikdash upon his entry there, and as well as, we'll see later on, 13 tables. So our mission here will list out the places where one does his 13 prostrations. Now, again, when we say prostration, hishtachavaya, we mean all the way down. Your feet, your knees, your waist, your face are all touching the ground. Your arms are stretched out also above your head with palms on the ground. So it's a full prostration. That would happen 13 times as one walked around the Beis HaMikdash. Upon entry, he'd come in and then turn to the right and then go around the entire complex on the Har HaBayis there. And our mission, according to our Tana here, these 13 hishtachavayos, these prostrations, were at opposite the 13 gates which led onto the Azara. The Azara is the inner courtyard that's 187 by 135 almost, further west than the Ezras Nashim. And according to this Tana, it had 13 gates. And as one passed each of those gates, he kind of got a glimpse inside of the Azara, potentially, and therefore he would prostrate fully there. So where were these 13 gates, and therefore the 13 stations for prostration? Says the Mishnah, Veheichen hayu mishtachavim, and where did they prostrate themselves? Arba b'tzafon, there are four places in the southern side. Va'arba b'darom, arba b'tzafon, four in the northern side, Va'arba b'darom, and four in the southern side. Shalosh b'mizrach, three on the eastern side, ushtayim b'marav, and two on the western side of the Azara. Keneged shlosha sar sharim, and they were opposite the 13 gates into which one could potentially access the Azara. So we're going to list them all now. First of all, sharim dromim, smuchim l'marav. We'll start now with the four southern gates, and we'll start with the ones that are the most west, so the southwest gates, most western gate on the southern side, and then we'll move easter from there along the south. The first one's called Shar HaElyon, the upper gate. And it was called the upper gate because it was, topographically speaking, the highest gate. The Har HaBayis slopes downwards from there, and the highest part of the city, that northwest corner, so it's called the upper gate, Shar HaElyon, and it's not clear exactly what it was used for. The second is Shar HaDelek, the fuel gate, and it was through that gate that the wood was brought to set up the pyres, the maracha, on the Mizbeach, on the altar. Then the third, moving further to the east, was Shar HaBechoros, the gate for the firstborns. This is a reference to firstborn animals, and actually this was the gate through which all of the animals that were brought as korbanos, offerings that were kachim kalim, of lesser sanctity, were brought. There are actually five categories of kachim kalim, including shlamim, toda, meiser, pesach, and the bechor. Now the bechor, while not particularly special compared to the other ones, is the one from whom its name is derived, this gate, because the other gate in the north, we'll see there's another gate for the kachshei kachim, the more sanctified, of which there are three categories, Ola, Chatas, and Asham. When it comes to Ola, Chatas, and Asham, so either they're totally burned in the Mizbeach, or in the case of an Ola, or in the case of a Chatas and Asham, the Kohanim eat the whole thing. So it kind of seems like when it comes to Kachim, Kachim, the Kohanim get everything, and Kachim Kalim, like the Shlamim and the Toda and the Meiser and the Pesach, it's the Baalim which get most of the meat. But when it comes to the Bechor, kind of like Kachim, Kachim, it all goes to the Kohen. The Bechor is a gift to the Kohen. It's brought as a Korban, but the Kohanim eat the Bechor meat. And therefore, this was called Shar Bechor, to let you know that although the Bechor is Kachim Kalim and coming in here from the southern side, it all goes to the Kohen, but don't think it's Kachim Kachim to do it on the northern side. Now, the reason why this is set up like this is because Kachim Kachim, the Olachatas Ashim, must be, I'll call it process for a minute, in the northern side of the Azara. When I say process, I mean the shechita, the kabbalah, the halacha, all that comes, the essential blood activities of the korban, gav kachi kachim, must be done in the northern part of the Azara, and therefore that will be the access point from the northern side, whereas kachim kalim, like a bechor, as well as the other four I listed, all can be done anywhere in the Azara, even the southern side, therefore, sort of for efficiency and traffic control, we have the Kachim column coming in through the southern side, through a gate, which we're calling here, the Sha'ar HaBuchoros. And finally, Sha'ar HaMayim, the water gate. And the Mishnah says, V'lama nikra shmo Sha'ar HaMayim, why was it called the water gate? Shabo machnisen slocha shamayim shal nisucha b'chag. It was through this gate that on the 7 days of Sukkot, referred to in the Mishnah here as the Chag, that golden pitcher of water was brought with the water from the Shiluach that was then used for the Nisuch HaMayim, the water libation, the special activity, Usha'avtem Mayim B'Sason. They would draw the water in great rejoicing and have the Simchas Beis HaShoeva celebrations every evening of Sukkot in response to that. So the water was drawn and brought through that gate with a good deal of fanfare, as we enumerate in Maseches Sukkah, with the shofar belongings and so. So in any case, the water came through there, and that's what's called the Sha'ar HaMayim, the water gate. And the reason why the Mishnah has to speak this one out as opposed to the other ones is because since it's only a once-a-year event, people perhaps are less familiar. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, Bo HaMayim Mefakim Vasidim Leyos Yotzim Metachas Miftan Habayis. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov has a different reason why it's called the water gate. He understands it's a reference to the prophecy of Yechezkel, Ezekiel Hanavi, who says in Perek Mem Zayin, in chapter 47, he talks about how water will emerge, like a tiny little rivulet, like a water source will emerge from the Kadosh HaKadoshim. It'll be tiny, the width of the antenna of a grasshopper, super tiny, and come out through from the Heichal, and it'll expand and expand. And when it leaves the Azara through this water gate, it'll already be the width of a flowing from a pach. A pach is like a small container, like the pachim katanim from Yaakov, etc. Hanukkah, I think, and so on and so forth. So a pach is a small, and kind of like the same way in English you can have the noun a decanter and you can have the verb to decant. So also you can have the noun here a pach, a small jar, a small cruse, a flask. And we have a verb here, mefakim, that like pours out in that kind of quantity. So the point of, if according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, is the water is emerging, according to Nevuah, and will emerge, Be'ez Hashem, from the Beis HaMikdash, and it will go through that gate. So that's why it's called that. The translation of the words, if I do it, is Bo Hamayim Mefakim. It's through that gate the water will, you know, will flow. Vasidim Lios Yotzim Mitachas Miftan Habayis, and it will in the future go out through like the threshold of the Beis HaMikdash. The Gra learns, by the way, that since it's present tense in the Mishnah here, Bo Hamayim Mefakim, it's coming out now that there really was a small flow in the time of the Mikdash, according to the Gra. In the future, the large flow will continue out. Okay. Lu'umasan, says the Mishnah, opposite them, meaning on the other side. Now, on the northern side, we had also, Betzafon on the north, Tzmuchim Lamarev, we had four gates also, parallel with four gates of the south, and now we're going to again start from the west side. So from the northwest, we'll have, and moving eastward, we'll have four more gates. The first is Sha'ar Yechonia. This is a reference to Yechonia, which is who is Yehoyachin. He's the one of the last kings of Yehuda, who was exiled by Nebuchadnezzar at the very end of Bais Rishon, and his final exit for the temple complex was through that gate, and therefore that northwest gate got his named after him. Next you have, moving further to the east, you have Sha'ar Korban, the sacrificial offering gate. This is the gate through which the Kadshei Kachim went through, the Chatas, the Asham, and the Ola came through those gates because it's the northern side. Next you have Sha'ar Nashim, the women's gate. It was through here that women would come. Now, according to Rabbi Yossi, there's a mitzvah to do smicha, to rest one's hands and push one's weight down on an animal, a zevach, prior to bringing it as an offering. That's not a mitzvah for women. However, according to Rabbi Yossi, it's a rishus. Women could do it if they so choose. So according to Rabbi Yossi, women who come in to do smicha on their korbanos will come to that gate. So although there is an area to the east of the Azara called the Ezras Nashim, like where the Simchas Beis HaShoeva happened, those four lishkos, the big menorahs, all that kind of story over there. Even though it was called the Ezras Nashim, it wasn't reserved just for women. This gate was sort of more for women to gain access specifically, so this is really more like an Ezras Nashim, if you will, specifically for women to come in to access their korbanos. According to Rabbi Yehuda, women never did smicha, and therefore the point here is they would come into this gate to be present, without doing smicha, but to be present as their korban is being offered. And finally, The fourth gate there on the northern side, moving, you know, further to the east, is the Sha'ar HaShir, the, I guess, literally the gate of song, but it's a reference to the instruments that would come through there. Either it's referring to that there were Kohanim who would stand in the northern part of the Azara, like kind of north of the Mizbeach, and they would blow trumpets during the Nisach HaYayin, during the wine libations. So it would come through there. Another, the reason why we're going that direction, not saying it's for the musical instruments in general, is because in Maseches Midos we learned that there was a storage facility for the instruments that the Levim played, which was kind of on either side of the Shaar Nikon, or but on the sides of the steps there, in the Ezras Nashim. So we don't bring the musical instruments every day in and out. We store them in the Ezras Nashim, but perhaps also they were brought, whenever they had to be brought in or out, they would come through this gate as well, perhaps. Okay. So that's the eight on the four and on the, we have four in the south, four in the north, for a total of eight. Here the Mishnah says, V'lama nikra shmo Sha'ar Yechoniah, going back to Yechoniah's gate. Why was it called Yechoniah's gate? Shabo yatzi Yechoniah begalu, so that's because Yechoniah extra through that gate, as I explained. Now, we said there were three on the east. The east is like, I'll call it the primary access point, where people are coming from the Ezras Nashim into the Azara. So there you have Sha'ar Nikanor, the primary big golden gate, Nikanor's gate, it was called. Ushnei Pishpishin Hayulo, and it had two like lesser minor gates, Echad b'yiminu ve'echad b'smolo, one on the right and one on the left of Sha'ar Nikanor. Now, according to the Rambam, these Pishpishin, these small doors, access doors, were built right into the very large Sha'ar Nikanor. So if you didn't want to open the gigantic, very heavy Sha'ar Nikanor door, you had a small door through which you could walk on the right and the left. According to others, there actually were two separate gates flanking on the right and the left, so you had three separate distinct gates coming in from the east. As far as the name Sha'ar Nikanor, that's named after a person. The most famous explanation is a Gemara in Yoma, the Flamed Ches, which talks about this person, Nicanor, who went to Egypt to buy doors for the Beis HaMikdash. He had two large metal doors. On his way back, they were coming up the Mediterranean, and a storm came, and they had to throw one of the two doors overboard, one of the two gates, I'll call it, overboard, because the storm was too rough, and they were afraid they would capsize. But it didn't help, so when they wanted to throw the second gate over, he said, throw me with it. I'm not too attached to these doors. That's too much of a tragedy to see them go. And with that mysterious nefesh, the storm subsided, and he wasn't thrown overboard. And when they arrived in port in Akko, in Eretz Israel, so the door had miraculously, that had been thrown overboard, miraculously had been accompanying the ship and now made it to shore, and they had it. And that was Sha'ar Nikanor, named after the person whose schus it was saved because of his mysterious nefesh. That's the Gemara there in Yoma, Lamed Ches. There is another different story, by the way. I think it's less well known, and that is there's a Gemara in Tainus, Daf Yud Ches, and when they would talk about, there was this a Yavani, like a Greek general or whatever it was, a Greek who was in the time of like the Pesach and the Hanukkah story, let's call it, when there was during the oppression from the Hellenists, Syrian Hellenists, and so this fellow Nicanor. He was looking forward to the day of he could sort of sack and destroy Yerushalayim. Ultimately, like the Hanukkah story we know, the Jews had got the upper hand, and when they did, they captured and killed this fellow Nicanor, and they chopped off his head and hands and feet and stuck them by the gate there and the entranceway to the Beis HaMikdash. You can see why this is less popular for the children's stories. But in any case, his name was Nicanor, and Sha'ar Nikanor is named after him, it would seem, according to the Gemara in Tainus Yud Ches Amud Beis, two different Nicanors. Okay, there you go. So those are the three in the east, and now you also have Ushnai B'Mariv, two that were gates in the western side, meaning kind of like behind the Heichal, if you will, like close to what we now refer to as the Kotel. The Kotel was further west still, but the point is like you'd be access to where the Kotel, other side of the Kotel, if you will. So those, Shalohai Lehem Shem, they were two access points, but they had no name. So 13 gates around which they would, as they passed, when they did their circuit, they would do their full prostration. Now, this mission here goes according to the Tana, whose name is Abba Yossi ben Hanan. Amuhel, there were 13 gates in the Azara. This is in direct conflict with the Shita of the Chachamim, which is presented in Maseches Midos, in the second parak, Mishnah Gimel, and there it says there were indeed 13 breaches, but not in the walls of the Azara. Rather, there was an area 11 almost wide around the perimeter of the Azara, the whole, and that was called the Chael, and then that was an area where already non-Jews weren't allowed to go. And at the end of the Chael, there was a big, like wicker fence, if you will, called the Soreg, and the Soreg said, no Gentiles beyond this point. Almost miraculously, the actual sign written in Greek, which says exactly that, no Gentiles beyond this point, under pain of death, has actually been discovered. It was discovered in the 19th century, and it now sits in a museum in Istanbul, which is pretty amazing. In any case, so the Greeks, during the forerunner of the Hanukkah story again, were rather disgusted by this fence, and therefore they maliciously broke 13 breaches in the Soreg. Okay? Later on, the Jews got the upper hand. They rebuilt the Soreg, but they were misakin. They made a takana. That's according to the Mishnah and Midos, that there'd be 13 prostrations done as one passed the 13 places in which the Soreg was breached, in expressions of thanks for us getting the base of English back in Tahor again. So that's really in conflict, direct conflict with the sheets are presented here in our Mishnah, to Machlokas Tanaim. Shkalim, Perik Vav, Mishnah, Dalet, 6-4, and another Mishnah on an instance of 13 that appears in the Beis HaMikdash. The Mishnah says, Shlosha Asar Shulchanos Hayav HaMikdash. There were a total of 13 tables in the temple complex. Shmona Shel Shayish, Beveis HaMitbachayim. 8 of them were marble-topped tables that were present in the butchering area of the temple courtyard. Sha'alehen madichin esa kravayim. Upon those 8 tables was where they rinsed out the intestines. A little gruesome. Here's what's going on over here. When one brings a korban ola, so the entire animal is burned, not just the emurin, other korbanos, all the other zvachim, animal korbanos, there's a specific set of emurim, sacrificial parts, which do not include the intestines, but the korban ola, the entirely burnt offering, such as the tamid, etc., and it's entirely burned, including the intestines. And intestines, of course, are the end of the GI tract where the food has been processed and now is essentially fecal matter, and certainly not appropriate to put on the mizbeach, and therefore you have to rinse out the intestines so that there's none of that kind of waste material that would go on the altar. So we use these tables as a surface on which we can flush out those intestines. So, in the Beis HaMikdash, if you don't have a picture in front of you, basically you have in the Azara, the temple courtyard, on the eastern side, starting from south and moving north, you have the ramp, which leads up to the Mizbeach, the altar, top. Further north than that, you get to these 24 rings that were used to secure the animals when they're being slaughtered, one for each of the 24 groups of Kohanim that would serve, the Mishmaros. And then further north from that, you have these 8 tables. Beyond that, there are these 8 amudin, like little pillars with hooks on them, on which the animals would be hung when they were flayed. According to some pshatim, the tables weren't just used for the cleaning of the intestines, as well as the removal of like other emurim, the fats, the chelev, the fat that must go on the mizbeach, but also used, they were directly beneath the hooks, according to some people, so when you hung the animal to be flayed, the animal wasn't draping on the ground, rather was sitting on a tabletop for the sake of the cover of the korban. Okay, so those are the first 8. The reason they're made out of shayish, marble, is because if you'd make them out of, say, gold or silver, and the sun is beating down on them, it's an open courtyard, Jerusalem gets hot, and therefore the tabletop could be very hot, and that could promote the rapid spoilage of the meat. Remember, when you slaughter an animal, it's still body temperature. The meat is warm and sitting in the open sun, and therefore you don't want to expose it to excess heat and, you know, promote the decay. So we kept it on these marble countertops, tabletops, so that the meat would not get hot and waste and go spoil, which would be inappropriate for the Beis HaMikdash. And the truth is, if you recall, in Maseches Avos, we say that there were 10 Nisim, miracles that happened in the Beis HaMikdash. Excuse me. One of those 10 was that the meat never spoiled, and that's true, but nevertheless, there's an always a rule of ein son chan al anes. One may not rely on miracles. A person is obligated to do his hishtadlus, do his very best efforts, to do what's right, and that would include preventing animals from decaying, the carcass from decaying, regardless of the miracle that would be present. So that's why we use these shayish marble tables. Okay, now, that was the first eight. We have to get to 13. So, ushnaim b'marava kevesh, and there were two that were on the western side of the ramp that led up to the altar. Echad shel shayish ve'echad shel kesef. One of them was also covered in marble, but the other one was a silver countertop on the table. Al shel shayish, on the marble one, hayu nosen es heivarim. Upon that marble countertop, that was where the limbs of the korban olah that would be burned would go first before they were placed on the altar itself. There was a very special requirements for how the meat should be apportioned, like the different how it should be butchered into pieces. So the pieces then go on that countertop. Again, that table is going to be made with marble so it doesn't get too hot. And the second is al shel kesef, as for the silver table, klei sharis, that were the different utensils that were used in the Beis HaMikdash, the knives and cups and so on. Elsewhere in Talmud it says every day 93 different utensils were used and they were put on that silver tabletop. Okay, now if you have a question, you might recall from Maseches Talmud that it says that the different portions of meat that were olos that would be going on to the Mizbeach, they were put on the bottom of the ramp first, Yonma also. So the answer is that when it comes to a private person's ola, the portions go on the tabletop. When it goes to a communal offering, like a tamid, then the portions go on the bottom of the ramp. Okay, so that was two more, bringing us to 10. Then we have ushnayim ba'ulam mibifnim. There were two in the antechamber, the entrance hall to the heichal, the sanctuary, on the inside of that ulam, al pesach habayis, that led into the entrance of the house here referring to the heichal, meaning the kodesh, where the shulchan and the menorah and the mizbeach hazav were, and behind that, of course, the kodesh kodashim. So you have two there, echad shel shayish ve'echad shel zahav. One of them was marble and one of them was gold. Al shel shayish nos and lechem apanim b'chnisaso. On the marble one, the lechem apanim, those showbreads, which would be going into the kodesh and sit on the table, the proper shulchan there for the whole week. So they would sit initially on the marble top. Val shel zahav, and the golden one, b'yitziyaso, on its way out, the lechem apanim would sit on the golden top. Shemal makodesh ve'emo ridin, because the rule is we go up in kedusha and we don't go down. So before I explain this, let me read the last, the 13th table, which is the Shulchan itself, the capital S Shulchan, which is Ve'echad Shel Zahav Mibifnim, the golden Shulchan on the inside, which is kept inside the Kodesh, She'alav Lechem HaPanim Tamid, upon it were those 12 showbreads in perpetuity, always there. So you'll recall that for a whole week at a time, the Lechem HaPanim, those breads, sat on the Shulchan inside the Kodesh, and every Shabbos afternoon, they would be switched out, and the old ones would come out and be apportioned amongst the Kohanim, and the new ones would go in. So the new ones that are coming in on Shabbos, but of course you don't bake them on Shabbos. No reason to be Machal Shabbos for the preparation of those breads. And therefore, the marble table is where the incoming breads, which were baked on Friday afternoon, were kept until they're ready to be slid in on Shabbos afternoon. And the outcoming breads coming out on Shabbos afternoon will be put on that golden table from which will be apportioned to the various Kohanim. Lahalacha, six of the loaves go to the incoming Mishmar and six go to the outgoing Mishmar. So that's the function of those tables, the two tables in the Ulam, as well as the one table, golden table in the Kodesh. Now, as far as the Malin B'Kodesh V'Moridin, this is a general rule that things which are elevated to a certain status never go down again. So since the breads had been elevated from marble up to gold inside the Kodesh, when they come out, they're not going back down to marble, they'll stay on gold. And that's the reason why there's sort of an asymmetry using marble on one and gold on the other. We don't want them both to be golden because when those breads are cooked on Friday afternoon, they're hot and steaming. And hot steaming bread, you want to cool off and not let the steam on the metal go and ruin the bread. Okay? So those are the 13 tables in the Beis HaMikdash. And now, our next mission will return us back to our topic at hand of the 13 shofaros, the 13 chests in the Beis HaMikdash. Shkalim Perek Vav Mishnah Hay 6-5, and now we return to the topic which we wanted to talk about, which is Shlosh Asar Shofaros Hay B'Mikdash. There were a total of 13 chests in which money was kept in the Beis HaMikdash. These 13 chests were kept in the Azara and in like a circular arrangement. The reason why they're called Shofaros again is because they are shaped like a shofar in as much as they are wide on the bottom and narrow on top. This would prevent people who are being tricky from looking like attempting to steal money by making it look like they're putting money in when really they're taking money out. Okay, so they couldn't get their hand in all the way. Now, each of these 13 shofaros have a different label on them, as the Mishnah says, V'chasuv aleihen. On those 13 were written. Now we're going to break them into two groups, 7 and then 6. The first 7 had the words written, Tiklin Chadatin, new shekels, V'tiklin Atikin, old shekels, Kinin, pairs of birds, V'gozle Ola, fledgling birds to be holy burned offerings, Eitzim, wood, Ulavona, frankincense, and Zahav, L'chaforos, and gold for utensils. So that's 7 again. Number 1, okay, well, I don't do it again. Okay, and then there were the first 7, and then Shisha, there were another 6, Linadava, that were there for voluntary offerings. Now we're going to break it out and explain each one in turn. So before I do, those 6 Linadava actually had something specific written on each of the 6, and that was Moser Chatas was one of them, Moser Asham was another, Moser Kini Zavon Zavos Viodos was a third, Moser Karbonos Nazir a fourth, Moser Asham Metzora the fifth, and generic Nadava the sixth. So what's going on? Let me speak out these second ones first. So when you have something like Moser Chatas or Moser Asham, what we mean is the extra money that was left over that you had set aside to purchase a korban, like a Chatas or an Asham, if there was change that had already been sanctified with the Kedushas Damim of purchasing a offering. Like, for example, a person knows he needs to bring a Chatas, so he sets aside money and says, these $100, you know, these $100 are the coins I'm going to use to purchase my Chatas, and then when he goes to the shop, the best chatas he can find is just $95, so he has $5 change. Those $5 are coins. Those $5 are coins. What does he do with them? They have kedusha, so he has to give them to the Beis HaMikdash, and since he can't bring another chatas, he only can bring one for one crime. He can't just do a voluntary chatas, sin offering. So therefore, he will put it in this container, this shofar labeled Mosar Chatas, leftover cash, excess cash that has chatas kedusha, and with that, they will purchase a voluntary offering on Ola, the Kites Mizbeach, these Olos that were brought when the altar was idle. Same goes with the Moser Asham, that leftover money that was consecrated to be a guilt offering, and same goes with all the other the others. The idea being that although all these coins are going to end up in the exact same destination, purchasing Olos to be offered when the Mizbeach is idle. But we want to keep people informed and mindful of the fact that if you have leftover cash from your purchase of your chatas, let's say, and it already had been consecrated, so then you have to put it here. You can't just put it back in your pocket or put it some other use. So therefore, we have specific chests to remind people of that. The 6th one of the 6 that are marked Linadava just has a generic Linadava for voluntary gifts, and that's if people want to give to Kites Mizbeach, they can just put their money in there. Anytime that they committed to some sort of money to go on the Mizbeach, like to buying a generic korban, with anything more specific than that, so that's not Bedeka bias, that's just money to korbanos, and therefore it goes in the Nadava box. Okay, that's the latter 6. But let's go back to the first 7. So what do we do with those? So first we have Tiklin Chavitin. So in Aramaic, the shin of Hebrew turns to a tuf. So therefore, the taklin is the same as shkalin, and also the mem of Hebrew goes to a nun in the plural, like im and in. So therefore, taklin are really shkalim. Chadatin, again, the shin of chadash becoming the Taf Chadat Tin. So you have, these are the new shekels, meaning shekels that belong to this year that people fail to bring on time. What you're supposed to do is give your shekelim in Adar, and they find a way into that chamber, the Lishka. But if people didn't do that for whatever reason, when they come to the Beis HaMikdash and they owe Machzor Shekel for this year, they'll put their shekel into this container, Taklin Chadatin, the new shekels, which then will be emptied out on a regular basis, perhaps every night, into the chamber from which the three samples will be taken over the course of the year, as we explained before. So that's the Taklin Chadatin are Shebechol Shana V'Shana, they're for this current year's contribution. In contrast, the second one, which is labeled Atikin, the Taklin Atikin, the old shekels, Atik means old, like Ira Atika, the old city of Jerusalem, for example. So those are the old shekels, meaning shekels that were should have been paid for the Machzor Shekel, but it's too late, meaning that's from last year's contribution, which you failed to give. Or even if you're talking about this year's, but you're talking after the third sample was taken, the third truma was taken from Lishka already, you can just go into Taklin Atik, and it's all the same, because it's going to go into what we discussed before, the leftover unused shekelim for purchase of various things we discussed in detail previously. So that is, specifically says the Mishnah, Mishalo Shakal Eshtakad, if someone failed to contribute to shekel last year, Shokel Lashana Haba, he has to at least make that financial contribution for this year, but of course those coins can't be used for this year's shekelim, because it's last year's, on this year's won't do. Everyone has to give exactly one half shekel per year. The third we have is the, you know, let me actually, I see that the Mishnah doesn't go back. So before we go to the third and fourth, 5, 6, and 7 were Eitzim for wood. If you contributed, if you committed to contribute to the wood for the pyre on the altar that you put in the Eitzim container. The Lavona, that was for the frankincense. If you committed to bring frankincense, so you wanted frankincense, so you go in the Lavona chest. And Zahav Lechapores, that's referring to either Lechaforot or Kaporet. It's gold that would be used to for the utensils, like the cups and knives and so on. The utensils used in the Beis HaMikdash. That word kforet is based on a couple of times that the word is used in Tanakh, like in Ezra, Perek Aleph Mishnah Yud, Pasuk Yud, I should say, which is called kforei zahav, gold and utensils, and that's what we're talking about. Okay, so if you want to contribute to the new utensils, you put it in that container. Now, the two that were labeled about the birds, so those we said were labeled, one was labeled kinin. Kinin means pairs of birds, or literally means nests, but pairs of birds. And gozli ola means holy, burnt, holy offered fledglings, little birds. Now, what are these? The difference between these two containers, what are their uses? So, now, according to the Rabbi Yehuda, who's speaking first, we say one is gozli ola, excuse me, he says kinin. The one that's for kinim, for the pairs, for birds, that's hemtorim. That's if you're going to give a tor, that's like a dove, a fully mature dove. And if it says the gozli ola, the burned fledglings, they're called squabs, baby pigeons, hen b'nei yona, those are the b'nei yona, the young, immature pigeons. The idea being that the Torah only allows two types of birds to be brought as bird offerings, a tor and a b'nei yona. Tor is a mature dove, and a binyona is an immature young pigeon. So those are your options, and he says one for each. And v'chulan olo, says the Mishnah, Tevi Rebbe Yehuda. Rebbe Yehuda holds that whether you put your money into one or the other, the kinim or the gozli ola, they're going to end up as olos, meaning they're all going to be burned, and there's no place for offering a bird chatas. Now, when it comes to birds, there are two types of korbanos. When it comes to bird offerings, you have olos and chataos. That's it, just a chatos and ola. And most of the time, when you bring birds, you bring them in a pair, like a zava or a zava. One is an ola and one is a chatas. Nevertheless, according to Behuda, there's no shofar for putting money in to have a chatas brought. The reason why is because he's afraid that someone could, if we would have, let's say, a single container where you could put in $2 and that would buy you one ola and one chatas bird, The problem is, if a person would subsequently die prior to the bird being offered, you can't bring a chatas for a dead person. And since the money is mixed in, now all the money becomes forbidden, and therefore we're totally stuck because all the other people who contributed put their money in can't have their birds brought. So Rabbi Yehuda says, nothing doing. We're using only voluntary burnt bird offerings and just have two kinds of birds, or two kinds of containers. But if you want to actually bring a pair of birds, we do facilitate that. You don't have to bring your own birds from home, which is a challenging thing to do, but you have to either bring the birds and give the birds to the Kohanim, or you can give them cash in hand and someone over there will take care of it. You give money and they'll give you the bird. They'll take care of the birds for you. We're not just putting money for a pair of olen chatas together, a pair of birds, a cane, inside a container because we're afraid that someone could die and then mess everything up. But the Chacham say, no, that's exactly what it is. Chacham omrim, kinin. If you put your money in the kinin, that means a pair of birds. That's echad chatas v'echad ola. Exactly that. It's like a old school vending machine of the first century. You put your money in the shofar, and then they take responsibility that that day they'll bring a pair of birds and olan chatas on your behalf. And that way, if you are needing to bring a pair of birds, it can be done for you without you having to deal with the tricky business of birds which fly about and cause all sorts of mischief, as we learn in Maseches Kinim. And that the gozle ola, that is cool in olas. So if you want to do just enough voluntary burnt offering, that will go in the gozle ola container, and that'll be burned as just an ola offering. So according to the Chachamim, they say it's true that there is a totally far out outside chance that someone could die, but if that happens, what we could do is simply is measure out one portion of money, the amount that's for chatas, throw that into the ocean, and then use all the rest for money and just discard one. And we'll say, through what's called brera, retroactively, we'll say that money was for that person's, by the bird of the person who bought the bird of the person who can't bring a chatas. Now, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't allow for brera. He says brera just doesn't work on a deraisa level. There's no such thing as brera, and therefore he can't rely on that. Therefore, he doesn't let the problem start by disallowing people putting money in for kinim in the first place for a pair of birds. Okay, the Rambam says the halacha is like the chachamim, that indeed there was one container which you could put your money in and get yourself a pair of birds. Shkalim Perek Vav Mishnah Vav 6:6. The previous Mishnah had mentioned those 13 different chests into which coins were kept for different purposes. Three of them, which we didn't discuss at length in the Mishnah, were the ones for the Eitzim, the Lavona, and the Zahav, the Chaforos. Eitzim is the wood for the pyre and the Mizbeach. Lavona is the frankincense, which can be offered as a separate korban unto itself. And Zahav Lechaforos was the gold for the utensils, according to most Mefarshim. So our Mishnah is going to, here in Mishnah above, is going to go back to that, but really our Mishnah goes off topic. Meaning, the basic halacha is, if a person wants to give money towards wood on the Mizbeach, for example, he can just put any amount of money he wants, coins inside that shofar, and then the money will be used to purchase wood, and that's that. Our Mishnah really is going to be focused on what I will call a nedarim sugya, that is to say, if a person makes a neder, a vow, to bring something as an offering. So he says, Hare alai, I commit upon myself with a binding power of a neder to bring wood for the Mizbeach, let's say. So then he has to bring that wood, or the value to pay for that wood. He goes to Yerushalayim, and that money can be put, if it's money, inside the shofar labeled Eitzim. The basic principle of our Mishnah here, the first part anyways, is that when a person makes a neder, and he commits to do something, he has to fulfill what he committed, and to the extent that what he said was a bit ambiguous, and it's not clear exactly the quantity he had in mind, so the halacha is he has to bring at least the minimum amount that will conform with the basic understanding of the words that he said. We're not talking about a case where a person said one thing and meant a different thing. We just mean a case where a person was ambiguous in what he said, and therefore his obligation is at least the minimum that will make what he said true when he does it. So that being the case, the Mishnah here starts out by saying, Ha'omer Harealai Eitzim. If a person says, I commit upon myself with the power of a neder to bring logs for the Beis HaMikdash. So then how many logs must he bring, or how much money must he bring to pay for how many logs? Lo yifchos mishnei gizrin. He cannot provide for fewer than two logs. The reason why is because when a person says Harei Alai Eitzim, Eitzim is plural. So if he says, I'm bringing, I'll translate as logs, for lack of a better translation. So therefore, he can't bring fewer than two logs, because if he brought one log, or paid money for one log, then he wouldn't fulfill what he said. He said logs, plural, one log is singular. So that's the point of our Mishnah. But again, I want to emphasize, this is not telling you, this is not saying that if a person wants to bring or contribute wood towards the Beis HaMikdash, he must only bring no fewer than two logs, or contribute amount of money to purchase two logs is the minimum. No, not true. A person could pay one penny towards a log, so he could bring one log if he wants to. It's no problem. But it's in the Nedarim world, if a person commits to bringing logs, he must bring at least two logs. Now, in the Beis HaMikdash, the logs were of standard size, the wood that they used on the Maracha, the pyre there on the Mizbeach. They're basically an Amma by an Amma, by a little less than an Amma, according to the Rambam anyways. So it's the standard size, and that's what he has to provide for if he commits to bring wood. Again, if he commits to bring wood, he has two options. He can bring the actual wood itself or the money to pay for the wood. Both are acceptable. If he brings the money to pay for the wood, it can go into the shofar labeled Eitzin. At all events, let's say he's bringing wood, it's important, it's required that he relinquish any personal ownership in that wood when he contributes it to the tzibur. And the reason why is because the halacha is that the wood on the Mizbeach must be tziburi, communal wood. And if he would bring it from his own personal pocket, it would be something from his own person, and it would be a private offering, or partially private, and that's unacceptable. Okay, fine. So that's the first, the Eitzim. If a person says Levona, he commits to bringing frankincense. So frankincense, we said, is an offering. The minimum amount of frankincense that can be brought in an offering is what's called a kometz. And therefore the Mishnah says, lo yifchos mekometz. He can bring no less than a kometz quantity of frankincense. So first of all, how much is a kometz? So the kometz, or the kometz, is the amount you can hold in your three middle fingers when you make like the Hawaii Aloha sign. So that means it's basically the size, the volume of your pinky. If you take your right hand and make the aloha, putting your three middle fingers down and your pinky and your thumb up, you can slide in a pinky from your left hand into the gap between those three fingers and the palm of your hand. And that's what we're talking. We're talking about the amount of Levona frankincense that would fit inside that gap, basically the volume of a pinky. So the point of our mission, once again, is not saying a person must bring at least a kometz volume of Levona when he makes such a contribution. No, a person could put one shekel in the Levona shofar, he could commit Harei Alai to bring one piece of frankincense. Frankincense is basically, it's sap from a particular kind of tree. It looks basically a lot like a cross between sultanas, you know, like yellow raisins, and rock sugar. If you've seen fancy kind of rock sugar, they see it in hotels sometimes, they put to your coffee. So it looks kind of like that. It's like the size, typically the size of around and color of little yellow raisins, but it is like hardened sap, which kind of resembles more like sugar rocks, if you see what I'm talking about. In any case, so a person could, each one's called a gargir, like one piece. So a person could commit to bring a single gargir of Levona. That's not a problem. But if he commits, Harei Alai, I'm committing to bring Levona, since Levona is offered in a minimum as an individual carbon, as one kometz, he must bring a kometz worth, since that's what he said. Otherwise, if he gave just one gargir or whatever it is, then the different gargirim, the different pieces, can aggregate, and when they have enough, they can, you know, offer a Levona offering, a mincha, on that, on the Mizbeach. Okay. Third of all, Zahav, a person commits to bring gold. Now, the pshat in this Mishnah is that a person didn't say just generically, I'll bring gold, as in like gold bullion. He says, I'll give Harei Alai a golden coin, a matbea of Zahav. And once it says a golden coin, so then the minimum is going to be the smallest golden coin. And therefore the Mishnah says, lo yifchos midinar Zahav. He can't bring less than one golden dinar, because the dinar, golden dinar, was the smallest of the golden coins. It is roughly speaking around like 9 grams of gold. Troy ounce, like a Krugerrand, is almost 32 grams. You're looking at basically like around like a quarter of a Krugerrand, if you know what that means. Think of something like along the lines of like a a nickel, but probably a little bit thinner than the nickel, or like a 10 agora piece, something like that. Okay, but again, a person doesn't have to say that. A person could say that he wants to just donate some money to the container that's for the gold for the utensils. He can put any amount he wants. And similarly, a person could commit to bring a golden earring, a golden, something the size of a chocolate chip, whatever he wants, and it doesn't make a difference. The point is, once he says a golden coin, he's forced, because of the rules of the Dharm, to bring a small gold coin. Next. Now, we said there were six shofros that were dedicated towards Nadava for voluntary offerings, and we said that the proceeds that were collected in these six containers all went to purchase Kate Mizbeach, Olos that would be burned on the behalf of the Tzibur when the Mizbeach was idle. Nothing was burning on the altar. But, as I mentioned in the previous Mishnah, they actually were labeled six different labels. The first of the six was like Mosar Chatas, the second Mosar Asham, leftover money for that was consecrated to purchase a Chatas, a sin offering, and then you had this leftover change that goes into the container, and similarly for an Asham and so on. So now we're going to discuss that topic. It says, Shisha l'nadava, those six shofarot, those six containers that were collecting money, that were called for nadava, voluntary offerings, nadava mehayosin ba, what do they do with that money? Lokhin ba olos, they would purchase olos, and olos a burnt offering, and habasar l'shem, the meat would go to Hashem, meaning they burn all the meat of the olah. We talked about how they rinsed out the intestines first, etc. previously. Va oros, and the hides, the animal hides, the skin, the leather, let's call it, the kohanim, that would go to the kohanim. You can't burn animal hides in the hair. I mean, you could, but it would stink terribly, and we don't do that. So the animal hides are not offered as an olah; they're given to the kohanim. Which kohanim get it? So the kohanim are divided into 24 groups called mishmaros, and they go in cycle 1 week per mishmar in a 24-week cycle, ignoring the interruptions that happen with the shelosh regalim. And then each mishmar is divided into six or seven batei av. Each base av is, let's say, a sixth, maybe a seventh, of the total mishmar, and they people of that base av would serve on that day. Which means, basically speaking, if you just to oversimplify here, if you were a Kohen, you probably only serve in the base of Mikdash basically twice a year, loosely speaking, because once every 24 weeks, it's your Mishmar, and then only one of the 7 days, 6 or 7 days, of your Mishmar service does your base of do the Avoda. But when it's your day, so then all the people of the base of, on that day, split all the hides that came from Olos that were offered on that day. So that's what we're talking about over here. Now, the Mishnah ends up by saying, we know this halacha from a drasha. Ze midrash darash Yehoyada Kohen Gadol. This fellow, Yehoyada, who was the Kohen Gadol in the days of Yehoyash, which is, you see it in Malachim Beis. So he was, in Bais Rishon time, he was a Kohen Gadol, and he darshened the pasuk in Vayikra Perkei, pasuk Yutes 519, at the end of when it's talking about the Asham, it says, Asham hu, like repeating itself, it shall be an asham, ashom asham lashem, for the one who sinned to God. But since it's clear we're talking about ashamos and being brought for the sake of people who sinned, so asham guilt, which turns into guilt offering, so for the one who's guilty. So since it's totally redundant, we understand there's a drasha made here, and we say that the drasha is that it's both asham hu suggests that it's going to go to the Kohen like an asham, does the Kohanim eat the meat from the Ashamos, whereas it also says Asham Lashem, it's going to Hashem, which suggests it's totally burned. So how do you reconcile, is it going to the Kohanim or is it getting totally burned? We darshan that a little bit here, a little bit there. As the Mishnah says inside, Zeaklal, Kol Shu Ba Mishum Chet Umishum Ashma, anytime you're bringing a Karban for the sake of some sin or some guilt inducing activity, I don't know, that terrible translation, it's hard. There are six ashamos for very specific things. Anyways, yilkach bo olos, so then, if you bought, set aside the money for it, and the money can't be used for the specific, this leftover money that you consecrated, that can't be applied now to another asham or another chatas, because you can't buy another one, you can't do a voluntary offering like that, so you're left with leftover money, those yilkach bo olos, you buy holy burned offerings, habasar l'shem, the meat goes to Hashem, va'oros l'kohanim, and the hides go to the Kohanim. Nimtzu shnei ksuvim kayam. And therefore you see that you'll be able to fulfill both of the mandates of the verse, being both Asham-like meaning some goes to the Kohanim, and being Lashem, the meat going to Hashem. As the Mishnah says here, Asham Lashem, and Vasham Lakohanim. V'omer, and indeed, that's what the Pasuk says in Malachim Beis, like that brings us drasha. It says, Kesef Asham b'chesef chataos, lo yuva beis Hashem Lakohanim, yu. The money that is for Nashem, and the money for Achatos, which you said is consecrated but can't be brought, lo yuva beis Hashem, it shouldn't be brought into the house of God, meaning as Bedek HaBayis, leftover money, which would be, you know, for whatever the Beis Hamikdash needs, to put to its, you know, whatever it sees fit. No, it's not Bedek HaBayis, rather lo kohanim yu, has to be done in such a way that the Kedusha ends up in the, at least partial with the Kohanim. How's that? You bring a carbon, Ola, where everything's burned and it goes to Hashem, as opposed to Bedek HaBayis, but there's still something left over, namely the hides, that go to the Kohanim.